Hello and welcome to another episode of the Leisure Wheels podcast, where we talk about all things 4x4, SUV and overland travel related. And I'm Gege van Rooyen, the road test editor. And next to me is Gerard, the features editor.
Hello.
And today we'll be talking all about the Grand, or not the Grand, the normal new Cherokee, which is a completely new model.
Completely new, yes.
And that was launched just a couple of days ago. Gerard was at the launch and he's going to tell us all about it.
Yeah.
So can you run us through it more or less? Give us some idea of what it's about, what kind of vehicle it is, what the range is going to look like?
Well, I suppose the main thing everybody's talking about at the moment is the way it looks.
Very controversial.
Because, yeah, it divides opinion. I mean, like, you either think it's ugly or you think it's very ugly is what I what I've seen so far.
And what do you think of it?
Well, I love it. I don't know why, immediately after arriving, I posted a pic and I think it's beautiful. And like, I got back, oh, it's so ugly. And well, I don't know why. I actually think it looks quite good. I mean, it's quite a lacquer machine.
It's not boring, which is good.
It's like, not
a lot
boring.
Of these vehicles are boring. They just all look the same, very similar, very conservative.
Yeah.
At least this is trying to do something different.
And if you compare to previous Cherokee models, which, you know, the designers seem, you know, it almost seems like the head of design missioned into design headquarters and he went, well, please design the new Cherokee. All you're allowed to use is this ruler. And you can make a box.
Very boxy.
Into which we can fit everything. And the new one just isn't boxy at all. I mean,
but traditionally, their vehicles have been. I mean, the Wrangler was boxy. The first Cherokee was boxy. The first Grand Cherokee. The Wagoneer. All of it. So there has been a kind of move away from it. Especially with the new Grand Cherokee.
And what we're seeing now with... well, the Renegade is still a boxy design. That's, for those of you who don't know, that's the new small Jeep that's coming out sometime within the next year. It's still a bit boxy, but it's more curvy, more sort of thing. I can't wait to see what they do with the model that's going to slot in above the Grand Cherokee, which probably will be called the Wagoneer,
the Grand Wagoneer. And that's going to be, that'll be a bit boxier, I suppose. You have to. Even with something like that GL, the Merc GL, once something's that big, it has to be a little bit boxy, I suppose. Yeah. But we'll see.
Well, I think the main thing with the new Cherokee is, whether it's ugly or not, I mean, we'll leave that for people to decide. Style is a very personal thing. You won't mistake it for anything else.
No.
Like, you won't go like, oh, that's a RAV, or it's a Jeep.
That's
a Jeep Cherokee. You'll see it coming.
But I think a lot of it is also because it's traditionally been that boxy.
Mm.
It's such a huge change in terms of design that's caught people off guard almost.
Mm.
If it didn't have this traditionally very boxy shape, then it would have been all right. But people are a bit shocked. But I think give it some time and allow people to get used to it. Even vehicles like the Hilux that we're so used to now. People didn't like the looks. They said it was too different from the previous model. I think you give this sort of thing time and people get used to it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how Jeep fans react to the design. Because, like we know, Jeep fans are diehard fans. I mean, you get Jeep shops with Jeep clothes. You can buy a Jeep underwear. You know, that's hardcore. It's going to be interesting to see how they react to the looks of the new one.
Because this is essentially a crossover. If you look at the technical description of it, because that is based on the platform of a Dodge Dart.
Mm.
So that's also a very big change to get people. They used to make such a big deal of the fact that this is a trail-rated vehicle.
Mm.
And now you've got something like this. So I think a lot of people are worried that Jeep is kind of losing that identity.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing with the new Cherokee is Jeep is taking it in an entirely new direction. If you just look at the range, because right down at the bottom we have a 2.4 liter Longitude, which is, and many of you won't believe this, front wheel drive only, which is insane on a Cherokee. I mean, like, it's almost sacrilege to have a front wheel drive Cherokee.
Yeah.
But and even higher up in the range, you get front wheel drive, then you get all wheel drive, which is where the crossover comes from.
Yes,
a little bit of off road capability, And then right at the top, you have a Trailhawk.
The Trailhawk.
Which is going to be a Jeep thing from now on, because it's exactly the same sort of thing with the Renegade. We have a front-wheel drive, and then at the top, you have a Trailhawk, which is trail-rated and comes with all the hardcore 4x4 stuff.
The problem is you just limit yourself too much when you only make hardcore all-wheel drive vehicles, because a lot of people, they don't want it. They don't need it. And they'd rather just have a cheaper model. So a lot of people are going to opt for a Toyota RAV4 that's front-wheel drive because they don't want to pay the extra for the 4x4 Jeep. So you can't really blame them for going that route. There's too much money to be made.
Yeah, I think they're going to make a lot of money with the entry-level model, because a Jeep is sort of, it's a definition of a lifestyle vehicle. You're not buying a car, you're buying into a Jeep lifestyle. And I think a lot of people out there have wanted to own a Jeep, but up until now, it's been like insanely expensive. You had to have a 4x4. That's how it was. But now you've got the option of buying a cheaper one, which isn't.
But speaking of insanely expensive, all of that being said, the Cherokee is not especially affordable, is it?
Yeah, no, it's, the pricing is tough to stomach. I mean, there's no beating around the bush. Like, if you look at, it's the Cherokee sort of slots in the middle, which is a bit awkward, because on one side you have cheaper SUVs, crossovers, which are similar in size, like the RAV4, the Cougar, all of that stuff. And then on the other side, more expensive side, you have the X3, BMW X3, Audi Q5, the Infiniti QX50.
The real premium kind of
premium
vehicles.
Kind of stuff. And it slots in right between them. So it's more expensive than the average SUV.
Where does it start? What's the starting price?
This is the rough part, because I know cars like the Cougar and the RAV4, they tend to start at just under
300,000,
if I'm not mistaken. The Cherokee lineup starts at 480,000.
Sure.
Which is
a lot of money.
That's a tough sell, yeah. That's but having said that, it is a more premium product.
Is it? Is it obviously a more premium product?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, if that's one of the main reasons they flew in the head of interior design for Dodge, Jeep, Chrysler, and what's the other one? Well, anyways, the head of interior design, and they had a whole spiel about how the interior of this Cherokee is now premium.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you remember back to previous Cherokees and the Commander, I mean, they had really terrible interiors.
Older generations were boring.
And they focused a lot on, you know, quality materials. The touch points are, you know, wrapped in quality materials. You get a lot of equipment as standard. So, I would call it a premium car.
Cool.
From that side.
And, I mean, does it compare to, say, a BMW or a Merc or something like that?
In terms of refinement and
that premium kind of quality feel, where you feel like this is just a top-level vehicle.
It's almost there. Okay. Almost. Like, almost there. It's much better than the cheaper stuff, but it's almost on par with the Germans.
Okay. And take us through the lineup in terms of engines and that sort of thing.
Base model, you get a 2.4-liter petrol engine. Only petrol engines available currently in South Africa.
And no word on diesels, hey?
We asked that question at the launch, and you know, they were quite evasive about it, saying that they feel that most people tend to buy petrols in this segment, which I haven't checked the NOMSA figures. I don't know how true that is, but it feels like they're losing out on some business by not introducing a diesel. It may just be a case of a diesel not being available at
this
moment.
What would they put in there? Maybe the 2.8 CRD or something?
But that's too old now.
That's the thing.
And it won't fit the character of the new premium Cherokee. And I suppose that V6 diesel from the Grand Cherokee is, well, it's too big. So,
and if these cars are already that expensive, can you imagine what you'd pay?
Mm. Yeah, so it may be a case of they could be developing a diesel engine as we speak, and they're not willing to comment on it yet, but at the moment there's no diesel. There may be one in the future, there may be not, we just don't know.
So, entry-level model, 2.4
four-cylinder petrol engine.
And what's the performance figures on that?
130 kilowatt and 230 newton meters of torque. Unfortunately, we were scheduled to drive this particular model with front-wheel drive only, but it rained the night before, which made the, well, George just a muddy mess, and they wouldn't allow us to get in the cars to drive them up a hill or whatever.
Okay.
Well, I spoke to the guy who got them. We took a helicopter to literally the top of this hill where all of the 2.4 litre front wheel drive models were parked. And the guy who got them there told us that he basically took all of those cars down that hill where we parked them sideways. So
just too dangerous.
It's just too dangerous to get into them. So I have no idea how it performs or fuel consumption.
And gearbox?
Nine-speed automatic gearbox.
So across the range, they've all got the nine-speed.
Which is the first in this segment. Nine-speed.
I mean, there's only the Evoque, really, the only other vehicle locally that's even got a nine-speed.
Yeah.
So brand new technology. So this is the 480,000 rand model.
Yeah.
Then 2.4 front wheel
drive. Yeah. And but the other nice thing about the Jeep range is that most of the luxury equipment is standard across the range. The 2.4-litre Longitude, they call it, entry-level, misses out on a few things. I think it doesn't have leather seats, and it doesn't have a customizable dial setup like the other models have. But, I mean, it's quite luxurious. All of them have got Jeep's Uconnect touchscreen system, which is one of the big reasons why I think the interior is such a nice place to be.
And then next model?
Next model in the lineup is a 3.2 litre V6 limited, also front wheel drive.
And what's the performance figures on those?
Well, that's it's an old school V6 engine. 3.2 litres, 200 kilowatts, 315 newton meters.
So that's a lot of power.
It's a lot of power.
But it's going to be thirsty as well.
Like you wouldn't believe. I mean, and the lucky thing about it is it sounds absolutely beautiful.
I've driven that one quite extensively.
I've driven the all-wheel drive model with a 3.2, not the front wheel drive, but same engine, and it sounds beautiful. It's but at the same time, you can sort of see like the fuel needle
just dropping. And what's the price on that one?
The price on that model, front wheel drive 3.2, is 506,000.
Okay.
So not that much more actually than a 2.4 liter.
But economy wise, you're going to take a hit.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It's I don't know. I can't really comment on the 2.4, but I assume that with how much the Cherokee weighs and the performance of the 2.4 liter, you're probably going to have to rev it hard. So. I don't think the economy on that one is going to be great, but
yes.
I don't know how it works with a 9-speed auto, so it may be way more fuel efficient.
And then the next one is then the same, essentially, just with all-wheel drive.
Exactly, yeah. 3.2 limited with all-wheel drive.
And
which
then
is, it has Jeep's Select Terrain system.
Okay.
Which it's a traction control system, which you just sort of dial and you tell it, I'm on snow, I'm on mud or sand, I'm on...
Like the Land Rover Terrain Response.
Exactly, yeah.
And no low range or anything like that?
No, not on that model. It's proper all-wheel drive. It's automatic, like as soon as it detects slip, it activates like four-wheel drive. So it's...
And can you lock the center dip on that? Or
no, not at all.
It does it all on its own?
Yeah, the 3.2 limited all-wheel drive is like crossover. I mean, not a hardcore 4x4. It's got all-wheel drive capability for maybe when it rains or if you find yourself on a gravel road, but nothing too serious.
And what does that go for?
That one goes for 564. So
it's getting expensive now.
It's getting expensive now. And that's where it starts getting premium now.
Sure.
And then, one level up from that, we have the trail orb.
And that's the flagship.
Flagship
top
one.
Top spec.
Yeah. Locking rear diff, low range, and it's got a rock roll mode on its select terrain as well, which the others don't have.
Okay.
And,
so proper low range.
Proper low range, all of it. I didn't get to experience that one properly either because, we drove on a gravel road in the all-wheel drive models to the small quarry where they had the trail orcs parked.
Mm.
And I think we spent all of 5 minutes, each of them driving. And it was quite, you know, you could see it was planned beforehand to showcase, you know, the
positive. Doesn't tell you anything. You
know, it doesn't really tell you anything. We went up a steep incline, drove off the other side, drove through some water, but nothing too hectic that would, you know, showcase the true ability of what that car can do.
And, I mean, this is trail rated, they say.
They say, yeah, but from the video presentations, it seemed like trail rated now means something else than it normally did. Because we know trail rated used to mean they took the car to the Rubicon Trail and it completed it successfully.
Mm.
But in a video they showed us, it sort of went like, trail rated now means this. It has ground clearance and it has, at no point did it say like it completed the Rubicon Trail.
But it did, hey.
I think it did, yeah. I don't actually know. I'm not 100% sure. I think it did.
Because you actually interviewed the interior designer. What's his name?
And he said, we did. Okay, then obviously, yeah. The other thing that makes me a bit skeptical about this is they showed us a South African made video of the Trail Orcs' abilities. And at one point, it's crossing over some rocks and stuff. And you could actually see one of the rock, you know, it doesn't, the ground clearance wasn't enough. So a rock came up and it hit one of the side panels. So we'll see. We're getting one on test shortly.
But obviously, this is not a Wrangler. This is nowhere
near.
No,
it's not a Wrangler. No, it's not a Wrangler.
It's not even a Grand Cherokee, probably.
No, I don't think so.
Because at least with the Grand Cherokee, that suspension can be raised. It's actually quite capable.
Well, the Trail Orc is lifted as well, compared to the standard model. But even I think ground clearance for the standard model is at 200 millimeters, and for the Trail Orc, it's 221. So no, 224 millimeters.
So it's around the Bucky territory, like Hilux, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But nowhere near what, say, a Grand Cherokee, which is like 280, you can lift it with the air suspension.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm looking forward to us getting that model so we can actually see
what and it also it's about things like the approach angle, departure angle, breakoff angle. Interesting to see how it does.
On paper, it's an impressive car, but... I just want to see what it can do now. Because, like I said, on the launch, we didn't... Yeah. What we did wasn't really...
It's pointless.
Yeah.
It would actually be interesting to get hold of a Wrangler and use that as the benchmark. And go through an obstacle with the Wrangler.
Yeah. And then,
follow behind with this and just compare how does it do. Because the Wrangler remains one of the best. And obviously, this is kind of a crossover. It's not going to be that.
Yeah.
But they're still marketing the Trailhawk as kind of a serious
off-road
4x4.
Well, the other thing it has, and we found this on the Prado we tested a few months ago, is with all these new electronic systems, it's got the Trailhawk has hill descent control, obviously. All of them have it.
Everything seems to have that nowadays.
But this one also has hill ascent control, which is you can set it at a speed and... You can just sit back keeps on going, which is, I mean, it's marvelous technology, but you sort of sit behind the wheel and you feel like a piece of meat, not really doing anything. Like, you just have to point it. And
So, I assume that's got the 3.2 petrol engine in it.
As well, yeah.
And that's your only option on the trail.
Only option on there, yeah.
And same 9-speed, but you say with low range?
With low range, yeah.
And
locking rear diff.
Price on that?
That one is a bit tough. You're looking at 608,000.
608?
Yeah.
608.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Sorry, you just said it has a rear locking dip.
Yeah.
manual. You can actually lock it yourself. Yeah. Or okay. Yeah. So that's good. So it does have the tools. So it's interesting to see how it does.
Yeah. No, it's yeah. But I can't wait to actually see what it can do when we get it.
But you spoke to the designer of the interior.
Yeah, which was magnificent.
What's his name? He's a German.
He's Klaus Busse.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was literally responsible for the interior.
Yeah, he's responsible for every interior from like the new Chryslers to the new Dodge Ram to the Viper to the new Cherokee.
Okay, so
responsible for all of it, yeah.
And you had a chance to have a chat with him?
Yeah, which was decent. Often on launches, they'll fly in the lead designer of the exterior, which is, that's happened to me a few times.
Mm.
But this is the first time I've actually ever met a person in charge of interiors, which to me is more important because, I mean, you see the exterior of your car a grand total of maybe 3 minutes a day, and the rest of the time you spend on the inside.
That's so true.
That part is more important to me. And it was awesome to sit down with him and have a chat about the inside.
So let's have a listen to that. It was in a restaurant that you recorded then.
Yeah,
so
that's the only place we could find. So sorry if you hear some coffee cups clinking and stuff like that. But
well, it's not great, but you can at least follow the conversation.
Exactly.
So let's listen to that.
I made some notes while you were speaking during your presentation. And the first thing I want to know is how long does it take to design the interior of a new car? Because I know the life cycle between cars is more or less 6 to 7 years.
Yeah.
How long, when do you start planning the next Cherokee? Is it already, have you already started working on that?
I can only give you some vague, not that I don't know the precise numbers, but there's a few things that we like to keep to ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Because I believe we are one of the fastest in terms of going from a sketch to production. And for us, it's a little bit of a competitive advantage. But what I can tell you is, rather than telling you how much prior to production we sketch, you know, a sketch, the process for us is a lot of talking and then a lot of sketching, a lot of discussing how can we elevate a brand and a product with that interior. And then we'll sketch maybe for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. And then when I and my boss, Ralph, who's head of overall design, when we see that sketch, that we say, that's it. Mm. We grab it and then we go into 3D, into clay, you know, into full-size clays. And but the designers sometimes still continue to sketch, and then sometimes something better comes up, and we just stop the clay. And we just it can be confusing for the new designer sometimes, but it's the right thing because we always stay on our heels. We never say, "Oh, just because we made a decision 6 months ago, we're going to stay with that." Mm. At one point, we have to, but in the early creative process, and then this clay process is about 3 months.
Mm.
Where we sit in this clay property and we move things around and feel comfortable with this, and then we kind of lock the design, and from then on we're refining it for production, which is a lengthy journey because things have to be refined and tested. But the creative phase is you know these months and weeks that we sketch and sculpt and clay.
Okay, so the other thing I want to know is obviously a lot of time goes into testing because you spoke about the resistance of the thumb wheel on the AC vents. Yes. I mean, that's something a normal person who buys a car doesn't actually think about, but that's something that needs to be tested and checked. And
right.
How long does the testing phase actually take?
Well, the testing for an element like that is mostly for reliability. That even if you use it, we simulate like life cycles, so that simulate like a 10 years of ownership where you move those parts. So there's this little robot right, testing these things and make sure they're robust and will not fail. The actual how much resistance do we need, we don't test that. That is just our job as designers to understand how should it feel that it conveys quality. And it's interesting that you say that no one will ever think about it, and that is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
No one will think about when you feel the steering wheel, it has a certain thickness and a nice feel. They will not think about it. They subconsciously, they know this is quality. Same with moving those thumb wheels. It's just the sound and the resistance conveys quality subconsciously without and yeah. think about it.
Yeah, because one of the things I keep on writing, because I'm from an SUV-only magazine, we only do SUVs and 4x4s and stuff like that, is people... I mean, if you look at the market at the moment, there's not really a bad car between all of them, RAV4, Cougar, all of that. It all comes down to the small things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the little things that matter. Like, yeah. just the way a car feels on the inside, yeah. or this nifty little feature, the map you put on the inside. Like, it small things like yes. that actually matter. Like, they're a big part of Oaks going, like,
yeah.
I want to buy that one because it has... something like yeah. that.
No, I'm yeah. glad you say that, because I really agree, because see, I think what you describe is like a physical experience in the car, which is very similar these days, especially when you're on-road. Once you go off-road, I think you'll see that a Jeep Cherokee still has that cutting edge. We don't advertise it, but the Jeep Cherokee has mastered the Rubicon Trail, and you probably know the Rubicon Trail. That is like
yeah.
the higher echelon of off-roading. There's not yeah. many. So some of the vehicles you've mentioned will not be able to master.
Oh, no,
so if you're after off-road performance combined with comfort, I don't think you'll find much else but the Cherokee. And I tell you what, in some instances, it is eye-to-eye with the Wrangler in terms of off-road performance, believe it or not. But for what most of our customers will do, you know, stay on road, you're right, the physical experience is very similar between a Cherokee, let's say a Mercedes or a BMW, and then when the non-physical experience comes in, or those details, it's what we take that extra time, the passion, the love to detail, and those, what you refer to, the map that we put in there, we call those things Easter eggs, and... we put them in there. It's a little delight feature, you know. It's something special that makes it a Jeep. It shows yeah. how much fun we have, and that we're serving a community that has fun, and we try to put a smile on the customer's face.
Well, it's actually the first time, and I've been on many car launches where I've heard a designer refer to an Easter egg, because that's I'm into films as well a lot. And that's normally something that I associate with films. The director would put in something that only a massive fanboy would know about, or something. So it's quite cool to see that it's actually finding its way into a car now.
Yeah, you know, I play video games, and in video games, the Easter eggs keeps the community going.
Yeah.
And we actually started it on the Wrangler, where we, you know, there's this black frame around a windscreen, we call that frit, and it's basically to hide some of the stuff that's happening underneath the glue and the hard trim. And in the corner of the frit, on the passenger side, actually over here on the driver's side, apologize, there's a little Wrangler climbing up the hill. And that was the first time we did that. A little, actually not a Wrangler, 1941 Jeep Willys. And we took that idea, and you'll find couple of Easter eggs now in all of our cars. It could be a map. In case of the Cherokee, we were hiding the map of Hell's Revenge, one of the trails. It could be in the instrument cluster of the Cherokee, where once you engage automatic pack assist, the 41 Jeep Willyses will show up. Things like that. I can tell you we will in the future take it to a completely different level in terms of Easter eggs, to a level that is more similar to what you know from movies and video games, where Easter eggs are not just a discovery, but once you discover them, you have to solve a puzzle.
Yeah, okay, that's going to be good. Because I think that's something, a person will buy a car, and then maybe 6 months along the line, the first time he actually needs to use that space, he'll go like, okay, fall in love with his car all over again. Didn't know this existed.
Yeah, that's fantastic what you say, because that's exactly what we try to do. See. You can only absorb so much on that day of purchase, right? You're more concerned about the finance and the overall performance. And I love what you say, because it is exactly that. We try to not only satisfy you for the first day, first week, 6 months, we want to renew that love of the car by you discovering, hey, you know what? They didn't stop at the obvious things. They went further and really took care of all these secondary, tertiary details. So I'm glad that you point that out.
And I don't know how it is. I suppose it's the same in America as well. But over here, people are And especially in the 4x4 community, people are insanely passionate about their Jeeps. I mean, we have active fights on community forums and stuff about maybe saying like, well, my Toyota Land Cruiser is better than...
Yeah.
And then you'll have a massive 4x4 meet where people actually compete against each other. I mean, that's the level of passion we're talking about. Yes, so, yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful thing, you know, and we're, you know, we're proud that people have that passionate debate because... you know, of course, the Land Cruiser, the Land Rover, and the Jeep Willys or the Jeep Wrangler go all back to the same roots.
Mm.
And guess what that root is? It's the 1941 Jeep Willys. Because when the first Land Rover prototype was built, it was built on a Jeep platform. The Land Cruisers were built in Japan because when the Americans pulled the production of the Jeep Willises, they had that empty plant, they had all the technology, so they gave it a Japanese spin and built the Land Cruiser. So both Land Cruiser and Land Rover go back to the original grandfather, which is the Jeep Willys. So we don't mind that passionate discussion. We love it. We like to see it. And we know when there's passionate discussion and they still come to the conclusion that Jeep is the solution, it's, you know, that's very satisfactory, you know?
Yeah. You also mentioned the first Jeep was the first invented the SUV, the luxury SUV, basically. And I'm assuming you're referring to
the Wagoneer. Yes.
Yeah, I did a long piece on the origin of the SUV because obviously there's now so many branches coming out of it. We have the compact crossovers coming, like the Renegade. And you spoke also about like we know the larger one is coming, and in terms of you focusing on interiors, of course, is that going to be luxury?
Not for all of them. See, the cool thing is if you have this family, and one end is the Wrangler, and the other end right now is the Grand Cherokee, and that end might be redefined in the future. You can offer different flavors. So look at the Grand Cherokee and maybe even the Cherokee. They're actually very close in nature and character. It's, you know, we take inspiration from travel, we take inspiration from destination around the world because we know when you buy a Jeep there's this aspirational part. People like to travel. But then you go to the Wrangler and it's not so much about travel, it is spending time in that car. When you then go to the Renegade, the new B-segment Jeep that we're going to launch soon here in South Africa, that's going to take you to your sport around the neighborhood, you know. It could be parkour running, could be skateboarding, whatever. So there's a different flavor from the tool Wrangler itself all the way up to the Grand Cherokee that is almost as capable but is serving a different kind of lifestyle. So yes, Grand Cherokee, you're right when you say luxury is certainly our aspiration. Cherokee, why not? But then you go to Renegade and Wrangler, and there's the pure fun side of Jeep. All cars have a little bit of everything, but they really show it more stronger in their segment.
Okay. And then, last question. You spoke about the future of interior design just briefly. What is going to be the next big thing for interiors?
The next big thing is happening in terms of connectivity.
We
all have these devices, we can't get enough. Plus, there's so many opportunities one can do with serving the customer, with being connected. Now, our main focus is getting you safely from A to B. So the question is how to crack the code on connecting you. And with connecting you, I don't mean to Facebook and Twitter. That is not my job or our job. Our job is to get you safe from A to B. But connection can mean another thing. A car in front of you might get into an accident. Rather than you getting into the same situation, that car could send a signal to your car so you avoid that route. The car knows that that, you know, if you tell your car where your workplace is, the car could calculate the optimum route every morning without you having to do it yourself, navigation. Because guess what? It's Monday morning, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And if you share that with your car, the car knows from Monday to Friday he's probably driving to work. Hence, he's taking that route. Hence, let me check what the optimum route is. So there's a different level of being connected to a greater system and having true benefits as an owner. And those things then need to be communicated in the inside. So you will see us more, even more, spending even more time and emphasis on the non-physical experience, but what we call the user experience, which is, you know, how the car communicates with you, serves you, almost becomes your concierge.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
So, sounds like an interesting guy.
Yeah, no, he was absolutely fantastic.
And Easter eggs.
I think a magnificent idea. It's like you said there, sort of hoping that, you know, during the ownership, or when after somebody buys a car, maybe 6 months after, you know, he comes across one of these Easter eggs. And, you know, then he falls in love with his car all over again. It's just, it's small touches like that. I sort of dig the idea of Easter eggs.
And you mentioned that you actually found some in the car.
I found some.
Such as?
I found three.
Okay.
But I've been on the Jeep forums in the States where the car has been available for a few months. Some people have found five or six.
And what would these Easter eggs be?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, you know, because it's sort of...
But give us
I don't want to spoil it for, you know, possible Cherokee owners out there that want to buy one. But if you...
Give us one as an example.
Okay. If...
The most obvious one.
Okay. If you have... if you specify your Jeep with perpendicular park assist.
And... There's been some confusion about that. What is perpendicular park assist?
Oh, well, you know, park assist, cars tend to have park assist for parallel parking.
We don't do that often everywhere anymore.
Yeah. This is now for like a normal parking.
Alley docking kind of thing.
Alley docking kind of parking we know in South Africa, where the car will actually pull it into a parking like that for you. Okay. That's basically all it is.
So is it like one of those modern systems you sit back in and it does itself?
Yeah, it does itself. Yeah.
Okay.
It's easy as that. Chrysler Jeep had a system already developed for one of its other cars, but on the LCD screen where it sort of shows you a parking is big enough, it has to have other cars on the opposite sides. You know, it's just a small image. And on other cars in the Jeep, Dodge, Chrysler lineup, it's a Dodge Dart, I think, is the outline they used. But Klaus and them, they rendered a 1940s Willys Jeep and put that in there. So that's
clever little Easter egg. So that's what you'd see on the screen.
On the screen, you'd see like a small Willys Jeep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So little clever things like that.
Yeah. And they're scattered all throughout. Like you have to actively search for them.
That's cool.
That one was easy to spot.
Yes.
Got that one right away, but I had to search for a few of the others. But they're all there.
That's clever.
Yeah. I can give you a tip, though. As soon as you get the car, lift up the passenger seat.
Lift up the passenger seat?
Yeah.
In what way?
Like, there's a storage space under there.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
And not physically remove it with the spanner.
No. They haven't gone that far. No, just it opens up a little storage space.
Yeah. This.
But you'll find more than a storage space in there, if you know what I mean.
Ah, wink, nudge.
Yeah.
There's going to be an Easter egg in there.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Who knows?
All right, so you spent quite a lot of time with one model, essentially, which is the 3.2
all-wheel drive. Yeah.
You did like 400-500 kilometers.
Yeah, on highway, on some twisty mountain roads, mostly on gravel, which was nice.
Mm.
Yeah, fantastic. On the highway, great car. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, with that amount of suspension travel, and it was always going to be a comfortable highway cruiser. And then on a mountain pass, you can switch it to select terrain. You can put in, I think it's sport mode or dynamic. It's something like that.
For the typical kind of sport / dynamic mode.
And that, you know, that allows you some sort of a little bit more fun with the traction control. And it sharpens, you know, the throttle input, and it holds onto a gear for longer.
Okay.
But obviously, and it did well. I mean, obviously, it's SUV, so it understeers when you're driving like a hooligan. But
and
otherwise,
body roll?
It's fine.
How's that?
Body roll is it's actually not that bad. I mean, it's a solid feeling car. I mean, okay. it feels solid and composed when you're really hammering it into a corner, normal people won't do. I mean, that was just to see, like.
But I suppose with this, it doesn't have low range. It's not really designed for off-roading. So although it's all-wheel drive, it doesn't need the suspension travel that, say, a Wrangler does. So you can firm it up a little bit, make it more of a pleasant on-road kind of car.
Yeah, and it is. But what surprised me, normally if that happens, the opposite is true of gravel road, because then the suspension is too harsh and it bounces and whatnot. But the Cherokee is, well, if anything, even more impressive on a gravel road. And the one we drove on was quite nasty. I mean, it took some guts for Jeep to allow us to drive on that gravel road. I think you know it as well. It's the same one Mercedes used on the GLA launch.
Oh, yes.
It's quite bad now. And obviously, it rained the night before and the night before that, so it was just mud everywhere.
So impressive in terms of like NVH and that sort of thing.
Yeah, impressive in that regard, and also it's quite comforting. Even if you take it over washboard, you know, like it normally you shake apart, but in this it just feels awesome. But the thing that really stood out for me is if you leave, you can leave the Jeep just in auto mode on the select terrain, and then it just sorts stuff out itself, and. Like we obviously on those muddy conditions, a car tends to oversteer when you put it into a corner and you push the power, whatever. But the system immediately detects it, and you can actually feel it braking, you know, the left rear wheel or the front one, and you can feel the all-wheel drive kicking in immediately. And so, I mean, in terms of that, yes, it just feels so solid. I mean, it's such a lack of car to drive on the road like that.
And does it feel quick with 200 kilowatt? I mean, that's quite a lot for...
Yeah.
You don't get many kind of compact SUVs that have that kind of power. You look at the popular ones like, say, the CR-V, the RAV4. The power's nowhere near 200 kilowatt, so that's a lot.
It's a quick car, and it feels even quicker thanks to the noise. You know, like noise plays a big part in performance, like,
absolutely.
And how you perceive performance. Jeep claims a 0 to 100 time of 8 seconds, which is
decent.
That's decent, John. It's not slow, but it feels like a second faster just because of noise. Like
and gearbox, is it impressive that 9 speed?
Gearbox is amazing.
Smooth,
smooth, so smooth, and it's got so what? It's always the problem with going for 9 gears is. You would think a gearbox would hunt around trying to, you know, it would get confused and be like, oh, am I supposed to be in fourth or fifth or whatever? But in auto mode, it was always in the right gear when I wanted it to be.
Okay.
And in sport mode, the same story. Having said that, I would have loved some pedals behind the wheel to do the job myself.
Mm.
But it has manual override, but only
normal
at the,
kind of stick shift.
Yeah.
Okay. And anything else that stood out? Anything else worth mentioning?
The main thing for me is obviously it's a new Cherokee, but it's a step up from the Cherokee we're used to. Because the Cherokee used to be an everyman sort of 4x4, you know, cheapest chips.
Mm.
And the Cherokee is now a premium product.
And that's sort of the same with the Grand Cherokee as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Where the latest generation has kind of moved it up to Disco 4 kind of territory.
Yeah, yeah.
And size-wise? I mean, from the pictures, it's tough to tell the size. Is it kind of typical compact SUV, RAV4 kind of size? Or
yeah, more or less. It has a lot of space.
Practical in terms of
practical,
space.
Practical, yeah. 100%. Three people can easily fit. Three fully grown South Africans can fit in the back, and there's a lot of space for luggage.
Okay.
So it's a big car. Overall it's a very impressive machine. It's just a pity about the pricing, but I think that's only because we were expecting previous generation Jeep pricing, which I mean that car was quite cheap, actually. But
it is a little bit of a shock to the system. I mean, yeah. If you open a magazine and you see those prices, and you kind of had a very different price range in mind, it's going to be a shock. And
yeah, it is.
The quality might be up there now, but you have to convince people of that, and you have to try and convince them that you can pay the same as a X3 or whatever.
But that's going to be a tough sell, especially in South Africa, where people tend to love their German cars. But on the other hand, like when the going gets tough, like the Trailhawk, which is the most expensive model, which competes directly with stuff like the X3,
yes,
28i, and the Q5 has a 3-liter turbo V6. It would just leave all of them behind, like so easily.
How many compact SUVs have low range carrying nowadays?
Exactly, yeah.
So this would probably, in all likelihood, be the most competent
of them all.
Compact SUV. So it's going to be interesting to test it. Hopefully we'll get our hands on it soon.
And I think the reasoning behind it as well is the Renegade is probably coming to South Africa. And I think that's going to be the new entry level.
Yes.
That's going to take over old Cherokee pricing.
And also the Compass and...
Yeah.
What, obviously, the other one, they seem to be... Kind of
Patriot, isn't it?
Falling by the wayside now.
Yeah, but they're part of like, there's a new Jeep and there's an old Jeep. And the new Jeep includes the new Grand Cherokee, which is now, I mean, we've driven recently and it's a fine car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's proper luxury and it feels quality.
Mm.
And you have the new Cherokee and you have the new Renegade that's coming. If it's anything we've seen now, if it's even half as good, like, it's going to be a good car. And then you have the old Jeep, which is the Compass and the Patriot, which is, you know, they were designed and developed at a time when Jeep was
something different,
in trouble, and, you know, the company had different and design principles.
It's going to be exciting times for Jeep now, because the Wrangler's coming up for a big change. No one really knows what's going to happen there, because it's such an iconic vehicle. It's like the Defender in terms of trying to recreate that. You can't really venture too far from the existing idea. But I think legislation in terms of safety, both for occupants and pedestrians, is just making it tougher and tougher to make that traditional kind of SUV.
I spoke to Klaus about some upcoming cars.
Like the Grand Wagoneer was alluded to.
Yeah, and we spoke a bit about the next... Wrangler as well. That wasn't recorded, unfortunately, but he said that the new Wrangler would be more luxurious, as the modern customer would expect, but they won't be straying too far off the recipe of it being a hardcore for wife. Well, I think the Wrangler is one of those cars, if you change it, people will start rioting in the streets and firebombing Jeep headquarters.
It is a complicated situation, though, because you've still got that solid axles. And it seems like at some stage you're going to have to go to independent front suspension, at least. Because even with the current one, with that 3.6 litre, you've got 200 kilowatt there. And this is a vehicle that's rear-wheel drive with solid axles. It's actually not that safe if you don't know what you're doing. So maybe they'll do something similar in terms of, there's still the Trailhawk version that's solid axles, but there'll be more kind of a road-friendly version with independent front suspension. I also mentioned that it might be going aluminium in terms of construction as well, because they need to lose weight on that vehicle.
But aluminum is a tough route to go, because you and I know this from a story we read recently. The new Ford F-150 is all aluminum, but they can't find body shops in the States qualified to work with it, because it's, you know, it's quite a difficult metal to work with. So we'll see.
We'll see what happens.
But I think Jeep from now on will have, all of their model ranges will have the softer models tailored to... everyday people who just want to be part of the Jeep family.
Yes.
And then a Trailhawk for the more hardcore person, which could be on the next Wrangler. Wrangler Trailhawk.
Because even the Wrangler, I mean, people like the look of it. I know so many people that own them that have never gone near a 4x4 trail with them. So they don't need solid axles or low range or any of that. So maybe they'll make a cheaper version.
It would make sense.
I don't think they'll ever go like front wheel drive or rear wheel drive. Yeah. They'll keep it 4x4.
Yeah.
But I think a softer version, maybe a bigger split between like a Rubicon and a Sahara version. Maybe there'll be even a bigger shift in terms of the one being more kind of on-road, the other one more off-road, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting times for Jeep.
But the Cherokee seemed like a good vehicle, albeit a little bit expensive. And you'll be writing a comprehensive report on it for us.
Yeah, for next month.
That'll go into the July issue.
The other interesting thing we can talk about is nobody's confirmed it. We haven't seen anything. But can you imagine an SRT version of a Cherokee? I mean, with these looks and whatever. I mean, the SRT 8 did wonders for the Grand Cherokee. I mean, that was it's a cult model these days. So, I just think...
They'll probably do that down the line. Maybe the first facelift or something.
No. So please, Jeep, if you're listening, yes, I want like an SRT Cherokee because I just think those looks would work so well with like maybe a bi-turbo V6.
If you're listening, I'm sure they're listening. I'm sure they play this Monday morning.
First
at
thing.
The staff meeting, they all sit around and listen. Okay, cool. So thank you very much for reporting back on that. I look forward to reading more about it. And then hopefully we'll get to test it off-road soon. Put it up against a Wrangler and really see how it compares.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Chat soon. Bye.